Welcome to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Tim Regan for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Jeff Gopin, who is CEO of Jewish Home Life. Jewish Home Life has served the greater Atlanta area for more than 70 years, and today the organization is thinking about its next chapter with regard to staffing, growth, and services. And now, here's my interview with Jeff Gopin, CEO of Jewish Home Life. Jeff Gopin, welcome to Transform today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm very excited to talk with you. Before we get deep into some of these questions that I have here that I want to ask you, I wanted to start with an introduction. So you're obviously with Jewish Home Life. Jewish Home Life helps serve the senior community in the Atlanta area. Can you tell us a little bit more about your organization and sort of how you do that?
I'll give you a little bit of my history before I give you a little bit of the history of the organization, if that's okay.
Sure.
I came to be in this industry through kind of a slightly strange pathway. I have an undergrad from Boston University. I'm originally from Boston. Most of my life has been spent in New England. And I went back to school and got a doctorate in physical therapy. And that's where my passion for helping seniors began. I worked at a hospital system taking care of very frail, elderly, very complex medical issues, and eventually ended up in the non-for-profit world working for a Jewish organization in Boston. And it was there that I eventually landed in Atlanta about 8 years ago as the first chief operating officer for Jewish Home Life. And then eventually, with the retirement of my predecessor, I was given the opportunity to step into the president and CEO role at Jewish Home Life. And I really have an affinity for the non-for-profit world, and in particular, caring for the elderly. And I also have a passion, because I am Jewish, for being involved in a Jewish not-for-profit in particular. So Jewish Home Life is really got a long history of caring for the elderly going back 73 years. It's got an incredible mission, and it was really founded because people saw a need back 73 years ago to take care of aging women that were mostly having a difficult time with their finances, were likely to be widowed. And they were Jewish, so they didn't really have a lot of options. There was anti-Semitism, and so these women needed a place to go. And out of that need arose the first iteration of what Jewish Home Life was. It was a home for women. It was on Spring Street in downtown Atlanta. And since then, we've gone through many, many iterations to what we are today.
So I want to take this to the present day. Obviously, the senior living industry, senior care, it's a very fast changing, especially with this new age of the pandemic and all that comes with it. It's a very fast changing industry. There's a lot of pressures, a lot of opportunities, and obviously a lot of new ways to serve older adults. So can you talk about some of the ways that Jewish Home Life is, 73 years later, evolving and growing to meet those changing market demands?
Sure. So Jewish Home Life is made up of multiple business units at this point. We were founded by this home for the women that eventually became the William Breeman Jewish Home, which is really kind of the mothership and has had a long history as one of the top nursing homes in the state of Georgia and definitely in Atlanta. In the William Breeman Jewish Home, we do both long-term care, but we also have a subacute short-term rehab program. So if someone gets sick, they go to the hospital, they have an issue, they come to us, we get them well, we get them moving again, we get them back to the community. That is one piece, and that is on our main campus, but our main campus is flanked with other lines of business. We also have two buildings that are HUD buildings. They're low-income housing for seniors. There's 260 units between them. So one of our properties is 200 units, very large, and we're in the process of doing a $28 million renovation of that 45-year-old infrastructure. We believe in taking care of everybody and taking care of them with dignity, and it has been a long time coming to redo this building and re-up our stake in the low-income housing market for the next 40 years. So we have a contract with HUD for the next 40 years. On this campus, we also house our offices for Weinstein Hospice, the only Jewish non-for-profit hospice in Georgia, and Eckstein Home Care, which is a non-skilled home care entity in which we provide services in the house if you need assistance with activities of daily living, grooming, getting out of bed, showering, bathing, those types of things. Someone comes in and helps you throughout the day. And we have Jewish Home Life Medical Services that also provide some care for our seniors. And one other piece of our business, which is on its own campus in Dunwoody, is Berman Commons. It's an assisted living. It is broken up with 32 memory care units and 58 assisted living units. And that really rounds us out as far as our business lines. And kind of back to your question, we have looked at over time the needs of the community and where there are needs in either housing opportunities, but also community-based services for seniors. We really try to identify those needs and see if we can, if there's a gap. And if there's a gap, I have a very active board of directors. They are wonderful people that provide their experience and their brain power. They are unpaid because this is a non-for-profit, and they help direct our businesses and our business lines and our thoughts about where we want to go in the future.
So as an organization, obviously you're balancing margin and mission. Part of that mission is to serve Jewishly. So I was hoping that you could clarify kind of what that means, how you serve Jewishly, and how it impacts Jewish Home Life's residents, patients, employees, you know, given the diverse makeup that you mentioned.
Great question. And this is something we struggle with as an organization, because being a Jewish organization, we are open to everybody. We accept anybody into our buildings as long as you meet the criteria for those buildings, i.e. housing could be 65 and up. If you're 65 and up, it doesn't matter what your religion, nationality, orientation is. None of that matters to us. And so we're open to the entire community. But we are a Jewish organization. And so how do we define that? Because most of our employees are actually not Jewish. We do that through a lot of training and education and support so they understand what it is culturally to be Jewish. And we really stand by certain phrases, and we kind of embrace those phrases, such as honor thy mother and father, one of the Ten Commandments, kavod, which is respect, and tikkun olam, which is repair the world. And some of these phrases have a deep meaning to Jewish people, but they can be explained to anybody that has a moral, ethical compass, right? They understand what it means to take care of your mother or father and have respect for them. They understand what repairing the world is. And as a Jew, just to make sure that everybody understands, it doesn't say repair the world for Jews. It says repair the world, right? That is for everybody. We are here and kind of mandated by covenants with God to do what's right for the world. And so we don't do what we do because you are Jewish. We do it because we are Jewish. And we try to make sure that that is part of the way all of our staff kind of engage with families and residents and customer service and care, with that compassion and passion for the service behind it. And going a little bit further, you would ask the question how that kind of ties into the culture of the organization. Mm-hmm. What we know as a great organization is the way you treat your staff, the way they feel engaged and cared for by the company, it will all show in the service they provide. And so we are in a company that provides healthcare, but also life, right? This is not seen as the last stop, but it is a stop at a moment in life in which life hasn't ended. Life has to be, it's just a part of aging that you need some assistance. So we need to create life. And so we do that, and we do that by making sure that our staff are cared for, they are nurtured, they are mentored, and that they feel that they are part of our family, that this is a second family, because I always describe it as a second family. So the more we do to embrace our staff, so our staff feels familial, they come to work because they love to come to work, they are respected in many ways, whether it's a good salary, the best in industry benefits, the way we celebrate them every day with different parties, and we have donors that actually support us as a non-for-profit community and support programs such as gas cards, because gas has become expensive. We give gas cards out on a regular basis. We have emergency funds that are non-recourse money if an emergency happens in someone's life. We have no interest loans. We do a whole slew of things that other companies don't do to respect our staff, to give back to them, to make sure that they can advance their own careers with career ladder opportunities and money that follows that, because that love and respect for the staff then translates to compassionate care every day on our floors for our residents. And this is why Jewish Home Life now has some of the best retention in the entire industry across the board, across the state, and across the nation.
So we talked a little bit just now about how you keep employees and workers satisfied. Obviously, you have to also keep residents, patients, families satisfied. Very important. You know, you just talked about how, you know, getting good retention, you know, making employees happy, that can flow into some of this. But can you talk about some of the ways that Jewish Home Life specifically invests in, you know, each of these populations, residents, patients, and families, and their satisfaction?
Sure. Great question. And there are so many things that we do. I mentioned some of them, but there are other things that we do as well. Number one, we take care of our residents. Our properties is what I meant, our residence is. We invest a lot in capital. And we have what we think is one of the nicest buildings around as far as a skilled nursing home, right? The William Bream Jewish Home, beautiful building. But it's 25 years old, and we're about to do a major renovation of that building. As I told you, we did a major renovation of the Balzer Tower, a 200-unit HUD building. We just did a significant renovation of our 10-year-old assisted living. So what you live in, because again, in spite of how much money you have, matters, right? There is something to be said for a nice surrounding. And there's something to be said for a community that chooses to do a $30 million loan in a low-income HUD building without regard to what the finances of those people are, because we take care of everybody, and nothing that we do says we only take care of people that have wealth or means. We take care of everybody equally. So for our residents, beautiful properties is one thing. Programs, many, many programs that we have for our residents, depending on where you live. You know, there are outings for people that are able to get out and about. There are many programs. We bring in people that work with the symphony that dedicate their time and donate their time to us, that actually put on mini symphonies for residents in the home or at Berman Commons. We have groups that come in and provide opportunities to interact with folks that can't get out that much. So they interact with people of different ages. We use technology. There are various technologies we use, and we're employing various forms of AI. We have virtual reality goggles for some of our residents that love it. We can download, if they can't get out and about and want to go to the beach, we can actually download these incredible scenes of a real beach, which they feel like they're walking upon. So we do a lot for our residents on a regular basis. We do a lot for our staff because, again, staff engagement matters, and the quality of care is a direct output of the way we treat them. Families, they are the lifeblood. They come in, they provide care, they provide interaction, socialization with their loved ones. But many families actually go beyond just their loved one, and they kind of bring small groups together, and they work with those small groups, and they interact with those small groups and play games with those groups. It's really just a big extension of who we are, to be very family oriented. And for people that touch us, whether it's volunteers, whether it's our staff, whether it's our residents, and we even have residents that do programs, they're all engaged in sharing pieces of themselves to make the lives of others better. And that's really what we're all about.
So you talked earlier about, you know, some of the ways, again, that you make employees happy, the gas cards, that was a cool one. You know, culture, as you know, is really kind of the foundation of everything that you want to do in a senior living industry or a senior living organization. Obviously, though, you know, employee satisfaction, that's not always the same as building a culture, building that foundation. So can you share some of the ways that Jewish Home Life can foster a positive employee culture, and then tell us more about some of the results that you've seen from doing that?
So as a CEO, I really, really subscribe to servant leadership. And I really hold my own leadership team to servant leadership. You know, you can take that old pyramid of kind of the boss kind of on the top and going down and flip it right on its head. I often joke that I want a picture made of myself as Atlas holding the upside down pyramid, you know, because really that's what I do, is I balance the pyramid, but I balance it so everybody else can be effective. And you really have to make sure that your other leaders, my senior leadership team, subscribe to that. And they do. And they work really hard with me to make sure that their executive teams below them really subscribe to that. So you need to make sure that it really is cultural from top down. And you can work on education, but also hiring, right? Hiring for personality, because you can always train someone to do something, but personality really can't always train. That really matters. I will also say that we're very fortunate, and I glossed over this before, but again, we have a non-for-profit board of directors, and they represent the community, and they're very giving. We also have, because of that board of directors, their extended networks. And because of all of that, we have the ability to do some significant fundraising. And for example, we're in the process of doing a campaign. We're calling it a campaign for the new age. It is an atypical capital campaign because it's not just focused on capital. It is a $15 million campaign. We are fortunate to be over $13 million. And it happened very quickly. We've had some amazing gifts given to this organization, including the largest one we've ever been given. The point is that about half of that money goes to capital. That is going to be for the nursing home renovations and some of the tower renovations. But the other half is going to go directly into supporting programming for our residents. And a big piece of that goes into supporting our staff. So we will create a multi-million dollar fund that will throw off a percent of corpus every year that will support these programs that we talked about, like gas cards, like birthday celebrations, holiday celebrations, celebrations just to celebrate. Sometimes we just throw a party to have a party. People love food. The no interest loans, which we've given out, I think last year it was over $70,000 in no interest loans. And the beauty is we've gotten 100% returned. Our staff appreciates it. We all know that sometimes living paycheck to paycheck is difficult, and that there are some of our staff that do. And that is something we're always trying to address, to build them up financially as well, as we do better as an organization. 80 cents of every dollar that we actually bring in goes to our staff. That is, we are very staff driven and staff focused. So the better we do, the more we can give to our staff. But those funds that we're throwing off will continue to add funds towards new certifications, new actual college degrees. You know, we do things like, we'll hire you if you want to be a CNA, we'll pay for you to be a CNA. And if you're a CNA for a while and you want to become an LPN, we have funds to help you become an LPN, a licensed practicing nurse, and then potentially a registered nurse, an RN. So we have career tracks, and we have career tracks in all departments. That's an easy one to talk about, but we have career ladders in all departments. So by just embracing and focusing money on staff to make sure they are happy, the payoff is tremendous. And we see it with things like the William Bremer Jewish Home just became 5 stars in Centers of Medicare, Medicaid services, 5-star quality and 5-star in staffing. So we actually can measure it with real world metrics. And it just, it continues to pay dividends to find programs to support our staff, the families, and our residents ongoing. And we know it just makes us a better organization.
So I'm glad that you talked about money. That's a good segue into another question I had for you. Obviously, Jewish Home Life as a nonprofit relies on support from the community to enhance your services and your impact. How does that, though, impact your business operations and how you can connect with the community?
So we raise money every year. On a regular basis, we have what's called an annual fund. That annual fund is money that we need to raise to actually take us from the red to hopefully break even, if not into the black a little bit. And when I say the black, people say, oh, you're a non-for-profit. What really a non-for-profit is a company that typically has a mission, has applied for non-for-profit status, and does not feed the pockets of any special interest. It doesn't feed the pockets of ownership. It doesn't feed the pockets of a board, right? Our board, as I said, it gives us their time, volunteers. So we are allowed to actually have a surplus, but it's what you do with that surplus that matters. It doesn't go to me. It doesn't go to my board. It goes back into the business. So when we raise money and try to fill the potential gap we have based on our budgets, the nursing home will lose money every year. It is a model that will lose money because reimbursement is not as good as the expense in taking care of people, and we have the best staffing in the state, which means we're more expensive than everybody else. So we budget to lose about $1.8 million. So we need to raise about $1.5 million to $2 million a year to fill that hole. We have other businesses that do throw up a small surplus, and that surplus goes into capital reinvestment, right? Funds for when our roof goes, HVAC system goes. And the other part, as I said to you before, is that 80 cents on every dollar pretty much goes back to employees, to their salaries, to their benefits. We pay 92% of health insurance for every employee that signs up for our health insurance. So most folks pay very little a month for health insurance. We bear the brunt of it. So it goes to keep those programs in place. And it also goes into making us different and better than our competitors. So what I say is the money we raise is the gravy, right? It's really something that we put on top. It's the differentiator. It's the ability to do things like, as we go through a renovation of the home, we're looking at smart beds. So I will tell you that in nursing homes, beds cost $1,500 to $2,000. That's for a good bed and good mattress. We have beds here that other nursing homes in the state would line up for, and we will eventually donate, because we're looking to replace them with $14,000 beds no other nursing home in the state will have. We feel that investing in technology, investing in good equipment, investing in things that can improve the lives of our residents, but improve the efficiency of our staff is critically important. We couldn't do that without extra money that comes in from the community. And these smart beds, like other technology we're looking at, will provide levels of intuitive health metrics that tie into our healthcare system and can ping you if, let's just say, there's a resident who's moving at night more than they should. Maybe they're not sleeping as well, and it will actually ping you and tell you sleep patterns off, and you can get the doctor in to see if they're having trouble sleeping or whether they're a fall risk and they're moving too much and too close to a corner. It will give us weights. It will give us blood pressure. It will give us all these things right into the medical system, and it will take that through some AI, and it will actually give you metrics that tell you about that individual, and it gives you a look into hopefully preventative processes if someone's getting sick, if there's a change. So we see all of these things as differentiators. They're from that support from the community, and they are a differentiator as far as who we are as an organization. And we feel that that's an important piece of who we are.
So I want to ask you a few questions here before we end. I've got a handful more, just generally about some of the things that you do. Something that as you were talking, I started to think about wellness. Wellness is a big topic in senior care, as you know better than I. It seems like, though, it's a very nebulous term. You know, how you can provide wellness it's not always clear what wellness is. So can you talk about the specific initiatives that Jewish Home Life undertakes to support wellness and engagement, you know, both for physical and mental needs?
So it depends on which business line. This is broader because we have so many business lines. For example, in our low-income senior housing, we bring in people from the outside that support Tai Chi and exercise groups. And at times we can even bring in massage therapists. We have psych supports and psychosocial supports within our staff and our structure to identify people that might be struggling. We facilitate interventions and bring in other services. So what we don't do here, we contract out with, right? If we don't necessarily have a staff member that does something in particular, we have contracts to make sure that we bring people in to help those that are in need. And we have a lot of partnerships with other similar organizations that assist us in those areas. And you're right, wellness is somewhat nebulous. At the nursing home, we screen all of our residents on a regular basis because we have an inpatient rehab program. So if someone is not walking as well as they were, or is feeling weak, or has even been sick, so they were in bed for a week, we make sure they get screened to make sure they are back on their feet, that rehab is involved. We have a outpatient rehab center in our assisted living as well. So we identify people that have had physical changes. We also have contracts with outside resources to bring in therapy. So if people have needs. So it is all encompassing. And I think that's great that you brought it up. Wellness is not just physical. It is emotional. It's mental. And we really try to stay ahead of that. And on top of it, we also have spiritual support. There are people that are very spiritual here. We have people come in from the outside, but we also have our own rabbi that works a lot with the residents, a lot with the staff to interact and provide spiritual support and make sure that we have programs that are geared towards people of various religions. So it's critical that we see people as a whole, and we understand the difference between those pieces, and we provide for them to make sure they have access and easy access to anything they need to keep them physically healthy, mentally healthy, and spiritually healthy.
So we've talked a lot today about, you know, staff recruitment, retention, but it's staffing. Every time I talk with senior living and senior care organizations, staffing is even before the pandemic, is consistently the top challenge. And it's, you know, it's, there's no secret as to why. You know, this is a staff intensive business. You're caring for people that need a lot of help in some cases. And so you need staff that's well trained, that's engaged, and that can, you know, do the job. So is there anything else that you would share about Jewish Home Life's approach to recruitment, training, retention? You know, any other tidbits, I guess, that you could leave our audience today would be great.
So we are in the same business as everybody else. And as you said, there is a lot of difficulty on a state, local, and even national level in recruiting people. Part of the problem is reimbursement is just not that great. And so, we basically, our salaries and our scales can only be built up so much based on reimbursement, or you couldn't be in business and provide the care we do. So it's hard because, as you mentioned, finding the right people, the people that have that mission, that have that temperament, that have that compassion, and then want this type of hard job, and then want to accept a salary where truly they could probably go to a fast food place today that are having problems filling staff positions and get paid equally as well. So it is the extras that we provide, and reputation matters because people talk. And as I've talked to you and the people out there that are listening to us at the moment, as I've talked to what we as an organization do to retain staff, our own staff are the best word of mouth. They have friends, they have family, and they are out loving who we are, and they're telling people, and they're bringing people into the organization. And so the way we treat people gets out into the market, and people will identify us as a good company to work for, which helps us recruit. We also have an amazing HR department. They do some wonderful programs to attract the attention of those out in the marketplace and really sell what we have and why we're different to onboard people. And the beauty is that once you onboard them, once you engage them, that's where it's up to us to make sure people are cared for, that they feel that their teams around them are treating them with the same respect, are helping them because they're new to that role. And if you do all those pieces right, not only do you find them, not only do you hire them, not only do you retain them, but again, the cycle begins. They tell someone else, hey, I know you work with me here. This place is great. You should come and interview. And I will tell you that we have no outside agency in our organization at this time. We are fully staffed and have been fully staffed for the last probably 18 months, which is amazing because it was a goal of ours coming out of COVID to get rid of outside agency and get back to a place that we could be proud of where the staff wanted to stay.
Yeah, yeah, and that is a big accomplishment, especially given how prevalent, you know, agency staffing was and how expensive it was in the industry. So I want to ask you a few more questions here before we wrap up. This is something that I'm always very fascinated by, and I always like to talk about program for all inclusive care for the elderly, also known as PACE. Very interesting program, helps people get care they need, not actually living in a community. They get to go home at the end of the day, and they get a variety of services. It's a really interesting program. I've had a chance to tour a couple PACE locations, and you know, over the years. So Jewish Home Life obviously received a PACE grant, and PACE is one of the ways, again, that I see operators trying to fill a need, you know, at cost that residents can afford. So tell us more about how Jewish Home Life is going to utilize that PACE grant and sort of what your philosophy is for that.
So Jewish Home Life is one of only three non-for-profits in the entire state of Georgia that received a $500,000 grant to do a feasibility study through all preparation needed to basically open a PACE center in approximately 24 months. This does not mean that we are licensed to open a PACE center. That is a separate process. But I would say to all the listeners that receiving of the grant, if we do everything that we're supposed to do with that money in the state's eyes, obviously it gives us a little bit of a leg up. And why would the state give us that money if they were not going to make sure that we were in the running if we kind of were good stewards of that money? So there are two different things. So we are in the process of looking at developing a PACE center. It is unclear how many PACE centers the state will have. In the states that have it, like I'm from Massachusetts, and Massachusetts had PACE centers for years. PACE centers and PACE programs are bar none some of the best ways to keep aging individuals that have various needs and are financially struggling, because typically to be on PACE, you need to be both on Medicaid and Medicare, so 65 and older, and meet certain Medicaid requirements, duly enrolled. This is one of the best ways to keep people in the community and healthy, keep them out of nursing homes, keep them out of hospitals. And really, it is a population health model that really starts with a day center and getting eyes on those individuals that are part of the PACE program as often as you can, with doctors, with nurses, with therapists, audiologists, eye doctors. So it really is all encompassing. So we provide a lot of the services that we're talking about. And we have partners in the community that also provide some of these other services that we'd love to bring in to our program. We feel that this is a huge opportunity to continue with mission in the community and to really wrap our services like home care and hospice and short-term stay rehab and all of the things that we do. It's a really great way to wrap all those services around individuals that are aging and at risk in the community. So we're very excited about it. We're studying it. We are seeing centers ourselves. We're in the beginning phases of our feasibility study. And I feel very fortunate we got this grant, and I'm really looking forward to the next steps, as we still have to make sure that this is right for us. And that really comes down to me and my leadership team working with our board to make sure that we understand the financial side of this, right? The risks that are involved, the cost to begin a program. And we have to make sure that it is something that we really feel will benefit the organization and the community.
So, Jeff, you and I are talking here at close to the end of August. It's August 20. You know, we're not quite ready to talk about the new year. At least I'm not ready to talk about the new year. But, you know, folks are obviously starting to have to think about the new year in terms of the budgets and what initiatives they want to tackle in the year ahead. So, one of my last couple of questions here is, in your eyes, you know, as we look to this new year, what do you think's on the horizon for senior living in terms of some exciting things that are happening? And also tell me how, you know, Jewish Home Life is getting involved in that.
So we just started July 1, our new budget year. So we actually have to think about things mid-year. We feel we're positioned really well for the next year and years beyond. And the beauty of what we do and having an engaged board and having people with various backgrounds, doctors, lawyers, people with technology and engineering backgrounds, business people, is they come from all these backgrounds and they give us their kind of insight into their various knowledge bases as well. And then we take that information, and in this case, we have a strategic planning and business development committee that is a board committee, is chaired by our vice chair. And we are in the midst of actually re-engaging that committee to look at the next 3 years. But part of that plan will kick off with a study that we're having done of a 10-year look into the future of senior care. Now, we know that 10 years is far out and a lot can change, but it's really taking what we know today and trying to predict the trends so we can use some of those trends in the next 3 years to fulfill whatever strategy that we have. And a lot of that does come back to technology. We hear more and more about AI. What does AI mean to senior care, right? What does it mean to senior living? What things can we do? Even what software can we create with a software engineer that might help us create a more user-friendly environment for our residents, right? We have our low-income housing, and what can we do there where maybe integrating Alexa and smart lights and turn on music and turn on TVs and being able to call elevators and things of that nature by voice makes their lives easier. Same with at the nursing home. When you need a nurse, you have a call light, you have a button. Depending on where you are in your potential memory loss, right? We do a lot of memory care. You may not even know to activate a button. Are there predictive analytics in those beds we talked about that could actually call a nurse, like if you're moving too much, you're fidgety, for you? And again, how do we use that technology to make the lives easier for our residents and more interactive? And there's a lot of technology coming out, as I mentioned, virtual reality goggles, and there are other tabletop interactive systems that you can touch. So they're involving other senses of people. So even people along that kind of progressive spectrum of memory issues may still be able to interact in some really fun kind of games that are made specifically for not only the senior population, but people that have other physical or memory care issues. So it's really interesting to see how technology will be integrated and change what we do. And it's also interesting to see what types of housing projects are kind of coming in the future. Because I will tell you that 20 years ago, when assisted livings were coming into play more and more, nursing home average stay was 5 to 7 years, and people were staying in assisted livings for equally that time. The nursing home average length of stays today are around 18 months. Assisted livings could be under 3 years, some cases, depending on the assisted living, 2 years. So people are coming to us later and later because they're living healthier and better in the community with supports. So also, what are those supports to keep them in the community longer? And then once they get to us, what can we do and what do our buildings look like that we didn't anticipate when we built them 20 years ago? So we're really trying to be ahead of the market, be very progressive. We have a lot of conversations with designers that design specifically in our market space, with people in software development that are in our market space, and really just looking at all angles of care and health and living wherever you may live that best life.
So let's end our discussion today with the old crystal ball question. So let's get out our crystal ball, look into the future. So you just gave us some great information on some of the things that Jewish Home Life is tackling. I want you to zoom out the lens even further and talk about just generally the entire sector or the entire industry. What trends do you think are on tap for all of us here in the coming year, 2025? What do you expect? Look into that crystal ball and tell us.
Well, I think that we all anticipated the silver tsunami. We kind of prepped for that in our industry, started building a lot of new buildings. And yet, it hasn't hit officially yet, because even, you know, my beloved parents are in their 80s and living in the community, right? So the silver tsunami is kind of in the community, but not necessarily dependent on who we are. And I think that providing the best services to continue to have people live healthy, social lives in the community is really what we're going to see over the next probably year to 5 years. What can different community centers add as far as healthy programming and engaging programming for individuals. What type of technology will help people in their own homes, keep them reliant on staying in their home longer? What services that can we provide as an organization or other organizations like us, like that PACE program, that really wraps around services so people can age gracefully, socially, and really not feel disconnected in the community? And I think that that's really where the trends are now. It's focusing on community-based services so people are not isolated. And technology, as I mentioned, is one of the biggest parts of that. But technology needs to be easy enough for an 80-year-old, a 90-year-old to actually use. And that is still one of the obstacles that we need to continue to work on, is easy, intuitive, kind of, as I said, AI, so you can express through words and don't have to open up a computer and log in. And, you know, things become very, very difficult for a generation that didn't necessarily grow up with all that technology. So how do they interact with it so it continues to fulfill their lives in a meaningful way and help them stay healthy and in the community?
Great. Well, we have had a great discussion today, Jeff Gopin. I just want to thank you for coming on Transform and talking to all of us. This has been fantastic. Hopefully you had fun. I did. So thank you for coming on today. This has been great.
Thank you.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I would again like to thank Jewish Home Life for making this episode possible. Jewish Home Life is open to all and delivers care for a new age through a network of residential communities and at-home services that ensure clients receive the right level of care in an environment that supports their well-being. Serving the greater Atlanta community for more than 70 years, Jewish Home Life offers home care, hospice, assisted living, memory care, rehabilitation, skilled nursing, and affordable housing. To schedule a tour or talk to one of their team members, visit www.jewishhomelife.org. I'm Tim Regan for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.